Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm your host. I love to help people with their gardens. We have, I'm a landscape designer, author, horticulturist, just every day, just staying busy all the time.
Award-winning.
Better Lawns and Gardens won two international awards from the Garden Communicators International. So I'm very, very proud. It's a group that I belong to of my peers. And I'm very, very proud to say that I have won it. Let's go to, this is tomato season. Okay, we are planting tomatoes. We are growing tomatoes. And so this hour, I'm going to be talking a lot about tomatoes. You might want to get a pen and paper. I'm going to give you a recipe for dried tomatoes. Have you ever had sun-dried tomatoes?
Yes, very good.
And oven-dried tomatoes. They are very, it's like candy.
Oh, yes, 100%.
Like candy. So I'm going to give you what I do for growing dried tomatoes. And then it's time for the dirty word of the day, which has to deal with tomatoes.
Now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And my dirty word of the day is locule. Locule. That's locule. And tomato locules refers to the cavities or compartments within a tomato fruit where the seeds are located. You know how you just slice them in half and open them up and you can see the seeds on either side or all around the tomato, depending on the variety? Those compartments are formed from the tomato's female reproduction organs of the flower, which they are called carpels. As the fruit develops, the tomato carpels transform into locules filled with a gelatinous substance known as seed gel, which protects and nourishes the seeds. Locules are important for four reasons. One, seed production. The locules are essential for seed production as they house the seeds necessary for growing new tomato plants. Healthy locules contribute to robust seed development, which is vital for your agricultural practices. Number two, fruit quality. The size and arrangement of the locules can significantly influence the texture and juiciness of the tomatoes. For instance, you can have a larger locules may result in juicier tomatoes, which are desirable for fresh consumption, while smaller locules might be preferred for processing into sauces or other tomato products. In culinary applications, the presence and size of locules affect the texture and seediness of tomatoes in various dishes. Chefs may choose tomatoes with fewer or smaller locules for smoother textures, while those with larger locules may be favored for their flavor and juiciness. And number four, in breeding and agriculture, understanding the locule development is crucial for tomato breeding programs aimed at enhancing desirable traits, such as disease resistance and improved yield. The health of the locules directly impacts the quality and quantity of tomato crops, making them a focus of agricultural research. So tomatoes are very nutritious. They're rich in vitamin A and C and contain antioxidants like lycopene and have anti-inflammatory properties that are used in certain medicinal preparations and skincare products. Do you know you could put this on your skin, Lizzie?
I believe it.
For hydrating and for antioxidant properties. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the research of tomatoes. But if you have a gardening question, we would love to have you call us 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text 23680. If you'd like to sign up for my newsletter, you can go to she-consulting.com, and then it's right on the very front page, the landing page there, and you can sign up. And I do not sell your addresses. I keep you very protected and I don't lose you. So you can go to my webpage and sign up for me there. So the research on tomatoes, this hour is all about tomatoes, but I will take your great text messages. I've already heard from Colette and Ken and Pinky, so I'll be getting to those in just a minute. So your research continues to investigate tomatoes' numerous health benefits, especially in areas of cardiovascular health, cancer protection, and metabolic health. So lycopene has been shown in research to reduce the risk of prostate cancer. A 2020 review of research found that lycopene significantly reduced prostate cancer risk especially in populations with higher tomato consumption. Also, too, tomatoes help in reducing diabetes and obesity. In gum health, lycopene can really, really help you with your gums. And then also tomato juice consumption has been shown to reduce inflammation in studies. Eye health, it's very, very important. The nutrition in tomatoes protects your eye health. And then in cardiovascular health, we know that some vegetables, depending upon the type, are often best when eaten raw or steamed. Well, not tomatoes. Tomatoes have more cardiovascular benefits when cooked. So I find that fascinating too, Lizzie. So
yeah, that is. I didn't realize that. I know people who are diabetics and they automatically whenever they think about the tomatoes and everything else.
So. Right. Hmm. Yeah. So, but usually you think that eating it raw or like in salad is beneficial, but tomatoes are better for you when they're cooked.
And that's crazy to think. Yeah. You're automatically taught that, if you cook something, then it automatically just gets rid of everything.
It gets rid of all the nutrition. Right. Exactly. So that's wonderful. 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text 23680. So tomatoes, unlike up north, which has one growing season for tomatoes this summertime, here in Florida, we can grow successfully tomatoes two seasons each year. February and March, which is our springtime, and August and September through the fall. Once temperatures average 80 degrees and up, the tomatoes will continue to flower, but they're going to stop setting fruit. They do not pollinate when the temperatures are over 80 degrees. So that's why we do it in the springtime and starting now in the fall. So, but if you'd like to grow tomatoes through the summertime, you can grow cherry, Everglades, and grape tomatoes, which continue to produce during the summertime. It doesn't matter the temperatures. So that's good. I was at a client's house, and they had Everglades tomato pop up in their yard, and they never planted it. So some bird must have eaten it, or some kind of animal must have eaten them and just gave them to, just spread them through the yard. I was eating them. I was plucking them off the plant. They were so delicious. Tasted just like candy. Just popping those tomatoes in my mouth. It was delicious. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to the award-winning Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Let's go to Marie in Melbourne. Good morning, Marie. How can I help you?
Hi. Yes, I'm in my garden and decided I'm going to try to propagate my cordyline, which I love, but I'm stumped exactly how to do it. I've cut off the top and cut off a few of the bottom leaves. How many leaves should I cut off or leave on? And what do you suggest for propagating it?
Well, I love your use of the word stumped. No pun intended. I love that. And so, Marie, so tell me about your cordyline plant. What kind of plant do you have? Is it in the ground? Is it in a container? How tall is it?
Okay, it's in a pot, and it's probably about a good at least 3 feet tall. It's a Dr. Pepper.
Oh,
no, Dr. Brown.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Dr. Brown, are you familiar with that one?
Yes, I am. Okay, and so how long have you had it in a pot?
Maybe a year.
Okay, so it's a year. Is it pretty dense? Or is it getting leggy?
No, it looks great, except it's getting so kind of top-heavy and falling over, and I thought I should, and I want more of it.
Okay, no, that's wonderful. Okay, so that helps me out tremendously. Okay, so here's what you need to do. Have you tried to propagate before and it didn't work? Did I hear you say that?
Not this one, no.
Okay, so you're going to take on one of the stems that's falling over, go ahead and cut, I would say probably 8 to 10 inch long piece of it where you have a node right underneath the node. You know what a node is on the stem?
Yeah. Can I insert something? I forgot to tell you. I emailed pictures.
Did you?
I don't know.
Who did you email them to? Me?
To you just a couple of minutes ago.
Yes. Oh, super. Okay, great. Okay, so I'll look that up while I'm talking to you. And so, okay. But when you cut the stem right below the node, and do you know what a node is?
That's where the leaves come out, right?
Right, exactly. So you're going to want to cut an 8 to 10-inch piece, you know, diagonally. So I don't want you to cut it straight across. I want you to below the node, about a quarter of an inch to an inch away from the node, cut it diagonally. Okay? And then...
I already cut one.
Okay, did you cut it diagonally?
And it's probably about that long, and it's below like 6 or 8. I cut off like 6 or 8 leaves.
Okay. So you have one already?
Yeah.
Okay, and so what are you doing with it right now? When did you cut it?
Just maybe half an hour ago.
Okay.
Trying to figure out how to contact you.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Okay, that's fine. So it's 6 inches long?
The stem of it, it's at least 6 inches, probably 8.
Okay, 8 inches is better.
Not from the leaves.
Okay, and did you cut it straight across or did you cut it diagonally?
There's a little bit of an angle. It's not exactly straight.
Okay, that's good. All right, and you can go ahead and cut the leaves off of the bottom, I would say 2 to 3 inches. You want to leave the other leaves on top.
Okay, that's what I've done so far.
Excellent, good. All right, then you're going to get regular potting soil, okay? You don't, and then you can go ahead and place your cut end down below. You want to have at least 2 nodes in the ground, okay, covered up with potting soil.
Okay, in a pot?
In a pot.
Or in the ground?
No, in the pot, in a pot. Okay, and then you want to keep that consistently moist, not too wet, but you want to make sure it just stays moist. And you can place it in the same area as your other cordyline. If that's getting enough sunlight and it's doing fine, it should be just fine. You do not want to put it out in the full sun. Okay, so is it indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors.
Okay, is it in sun?
I get some sun, but most of the day it's in shade.
Okay, I would just keep it on your patio or inside the house, you know, so where it gets bright light and not too much sun. You don't, because it doesn't have any roots to absorb any water, so you don't want to stress it out. Okay, keep it moist, and you can put a plastic bag over it to, you know, those 2-gallon bags to kind of hold the moisture in and create kind of humid temperatures. And then you just wait 6 to 8 weeks. You're going to start to see new growth on top by the end of September. And you can go from there.
Excellent. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, in the end of September, you can go ahead and gently lift it out of the pot and look to see if you have any roots growing. And then you can put it right back in and go, and you can grow 50 to 100 to 2,000 cordylines that way.
Yeah, I want to get a lot more of them, put them in the yard.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Now, once it has roots, I would keep it and keep it in a pot till it gets to be about 1 to 2 feet tall, then place it in a light shady area outside if you're planting outside. Don't put it out in the full sun just yet. Okay?
All right.
Thank you so much, Marie. That was great because she called me after she did everything.
That's funny. It's like, you know, I was like, oops. Oh,
I was
going
to say, can you just glue those pieces back together again? You know, and just so there you go. All right. So 1-888-455-2967 and text 23680. Let's go to Gary in Genova. Good morning, Gary. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yes, I live in the woods, more or less, and it's used to be sand pine scrub 50 years ago, but it hasn't been burned in years. There are a lot of oaks in the woods, and they have a lot of limbs that are just dying. Like, you know, there'll be green leaves around it, and then there'll be a cluster of branches, maybe 3 by 4 feet or something like that, that are dying. And this is a bunch of oaks all over it. I'm not familiar with any kind of oak disease like that.
No, there's no oak disease. So what we usually see with trees, especially ones that are growing out in Mother Nature, is that we see the symptoms or the direct cause of a drought. So what happened is that 2 years ago, over the last 2 years, they've had damage from no rain. They've not grown, and that affects the root system. But it may take 1 to 2 years before we actually see the damage.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that makes that makes sense, yeah.
Okay, so I would not worry about them, but I would go ahead, especially if it hasn't been burned lately or hasn't been cleaned out, to get as much of the dead debris as you can out, you know, out of there, because if you do have a spark, and we're getting towards the end of the summer season, but well, we still have warm temperatures and an ability to have fire for the next, 4 months or so. So I would just keep an eye on it and remove it if you can. If not, don't worry about it, and the insects will take care of it.
Okay. Thank you. Another quick question. Uh-huh. Just can't, I think I know the answer to this one.
Okay.
But, I have a red bud, and my soil is very sandy, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. I have a red bud, and it's done so well in the last 10 years, and it's about 15 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And this, during the drought, and I didn't notice it. I've never had to water it.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I noticed the leaves have turned brown mm-hmm. around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in the middle of the leaves, along the veins, it's yellow.
Yeah. That, again,
sounds like nutrients, lack of nutrients and lack of water, both.
I just think it's more water. More water. But red buds do need more water than normal. They're just not something that is as drought tolerant as a crepe myrtle. And so,
yeah.
But again, it's just showing symptoms of what happened months ago. So with these rains coming up, you should be able to see it recover. And it's going to lose its leaves anyway in the wintertime, so it'll start all over again next year. So hopefully this rain will be enough for it to recover.
Okay, and thank you for taking two questions. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome. Call at any time. We love hearing your questions. Thank you so much. That's Gary in Geneva. Geneva?
Geneva. No worries. You know what? Between my spelling and whatnot, it's, you know, you're lucky that you even get anything, to be honest with you.
Your spelling is entertaining.
You're so sweet.
Okay, so we have Colette in Winter Haven, and she says, why do mites keep killing my marigolds in pots? And the reason is, Colette, is that the pots are drying out. There's a lot of stress, the heat of the summer. Even though marigolds grow in the summertime, they are more susceptible to stress when we're not getting the rainfall, when the soil. I would check the soil in your pot to make sure that you have adequate soil. If you haven't changed it out or added to it planted it in a larger pot, then I would just go ahead and do that. You can make sure it's getting enough water. And then you can also use a miticide spray. You can use Captain Jack's dead bug brew to spray it. Don't do it in the heat of the day. Just do it in the early morning. You can also make sure that you can spray the mites off with water. But I just think you have a little infestation going on and you just need to get rid of it. So do the spray and then make sure that your pot has enough good soil in it. It's not root bound and that it's getting water. All right, so that's just one of the things. When our plants are stressed, they're more susceptible to insects. And whatever's going through the neighborhood will just happen to stand by. And if there's something there for them to eat, they'll stay a little while. So I have Ken. He's also in Winter Haven. He says, good morning, Teresa. Our Tibuchina tree, ravaged in the big chill, is growing from the base as a bush. We've been fertilizing every 2 weeks with Miracle-Gro and watering regularly. It's doing well. Is there a better fertilizer to apply? How and when should we trim to develop as a tree rather than a bush? Okay, so depending on how big it is, Ken, what I'm going to say is that it's a little too late in the year to start trimming it really, really for as a tree before the winter gets here. Okay, so it had really a lot of stress last year. Let's get it through one winter as a shrub. And you're fertilizing every 2 weeks. That's a little stressful in the summertime. But if you're saying it's doing well, let's not argue. You're doing just fine. And then what I would do then is next spring and summer, we're going to train it as a tree then. Okay, I'll talk a little bit more about it when I get back. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, the award-winning Better Lawns and Gardens, from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. If it's Saturday morning, this is where you are. We love to have you. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. So, when we were last on, I was talking with Ken about his Tibetita treat. Ken texted me, which you can do at 23690 and 23680. 80, Lizzie?
It's 23680.
There you go.
Line. There you go.
When I say it out of order, I get mixed up.
Yep.
So, apologies. So, I was talking with Ken about his Tibetina tree, and it went through such stress, it's coming back as a shrub now. And so, it's a little bit late in the year. I don't want to start trimming it to be a tree. So, let's go through the next winter, protect it, Ken. And then next, I would say probably March or April, we can just start to evaluate it again and see if you have a main stem coming straight up that we can go ahead and start to protect and make sure that it's going to become a tree. So let's get it through one more winter time. Now, you're watering every couple of weeks with a liquid fertilizer. And that's fine. It's doing well. So I'm not going to tell you that you have to do this. But it's going to be a little bit easier on you to use slow-release fertilizer, which is good for 3 months. And you can also get ones that are good for 9 months. And so they're granular fertilizers. And so you want to, I just think that that will be easier on you time-wise. And then also less stress on the shrub during the summertime with the heat. Does that make sense? I hope so. All right, Ken, wonderful question. Thank you so much. Let me know how you do, and then call back in next April, or you can call anytime you want. But, you know, call us back next spring, and we'll help you get through trying to select, you know, which tree to or what branch to kind of stem to use as your new trunk. All right, good question. Now, Pinky in Orange, Port Orange. Pinky's a longtime listener, and we just love when she sends in her questions. What is a grass that easily spreads and sends up about a 2-foot stem with black seeds on it? It grows so fast with these rains. How do I kill it? Well, Pinky, I have a question. Where is this grass that's coming up? Is it in your yard? Do you have a Bahia grass lawn? Okay, because that sounds like it is the Pensacola Bahia grass. And if it's got into your lawn, let's say you have St. Augustine and you've got some Bahia in there, then that's going to be an issue, okay? And it's the grass seeds from Pensacola that are quite annoying. They come up like you mow and then the next day they come up. And so when we recommend Bahia grass, we usually say the Argentina Bahia grass because then the seeds don't come up as quick. Now, if you have a Bahia grass lawn, then, you know, and you have the Pensacola, then I would say you kind of stuck with it unless you want to replace all of your, you know, Pensacola Bahia grass. So I would just need to know, Pinky, if it's in your house, around your house, and you have a St. Augustine lawn and you have some Bahia grass popping up, then in the fall, we can use a herbicide with, you know, to get rid of the Bahia grass that won't affect your St. Augustine. But if you have Bahia grass as a lawn, then you kind of stuck with it. And I don't know how to get rid of Argentina. I don't know how to separate Pensacola from Argentina because the herbicide you need to use would kill both. Okay. So I got a few questions there, Pinky. Kind of let me know and we'll respond back this half hour. All right. So if you have a gardening question, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680 and we can talk to you. So we're talking about tomatoes. So what do tomatoes, how do you grow them? If you're interested, this is the month to get started. You need to understand the two different types of tomatoes, and this is by how they grow, not variety, but how they grow. You have the indeterminate and determinate. Okay, so the indeterminate, which means, I don't know, I got so many choices. I can grow a lot. I can grow, high, tall. So the indeterminate doesn't have a set fruit production or a set way to grow size-wise. Okay, they're going to be large and they are going to sprawl. The growth habit is going to be sprawling. And it's going to require pruning and support. So indeterminate tomatoes, they produce over an entire season, and they produce multiple times. So that's what we mean by indeterminate, multiple times. Now, if you don't have a lot of room or you want to grow in containers, your tomatoes in containers, then you grow a determinate variety. And the determinate means you know exactly what it's going to do. You know exactly it's going to be more compact. It's going to be shorter. They're often called bush tomatoes, and they're only going to produce one crop of tomatoes. Now, it will still need staking, okay? So if you want a large bunch of tomatoes over a season, you want indeterminate. If you have just a small area and you want one crop of tomatoes, then you do determinate, okay? Tomatoes need at least 4 to 6 hours of sun a day. They need a pH of 6.2 to 6.5 for the best production. And they love organic material like black cow manure. And you could also incorporate a lot of compost in it. And they will thrive with that. I've even heard of people just planting tomatoes in the black cow bag. Have you heard that?
Yes, I have. And I've seen it. I've seen people who I know have done it successfully.
Yes, they do very easily in that. Black cow's amazing. And so when you're transplanting tomatoes, it's not like planting shrubs, trees, or flowers, okay? You can plant them slightly deeper than they were planted in their original pots, or that they're growing in their pots if you grew them from seed, to encourage deeper root systems. So when you lay a stem down underneath the ground and put soil over it, where there are nodes there, they will develop root systems. So that's really cool to know. And you don't plant them like you do regular plants where you want to leave them out of the ground one inch to 1.5 inches out of the ground. So as your tomatoes grow, you're going to want to do sucker removal. And this is going to create more density, and it's going to give it more power or energy to push the production. So you're going to have more tomatoes if you remove the suckers. So you want to the small roots that emerge in between the main stem and a leaf branch, go ahead and you can snap them off or snip them off. And then also, too, you want to fertilize with a 6-8-8 or a similar fertilizer, balanced fertilizer, and that will get you off to a running start. We've got more time for your gardening questions, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me, 23680. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to the award-winning Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you have a gardening question, we have, another whole segment. You can get your questions in. So 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And I just want to just get this out for everyone. Dr. Gary Bachman, he's a regular. We love to have him when he's in the area on the show. He grows the most wonderful, wonderful tomatoes and peppers. And he is the Urban Nano Farm. We have him on all the time. I just love Gary. He's just so full of knowledge about gardening. Well, he's lost his Facebook page. So on my Facebook page, I've got his new Facebook page, the Heritage Cottage Seeds. So if you're following Dr. Gary Bachman, something happened. We don't know what, but he's got a new Facebook page, and you'll want to follow that. That's the Heritage Cottage Seeds. And on my website, I have the link to that. So sorry, Gary. And Gary will be with us again in October. All right, so I am just finishing up with tomatoes, growing them, everything you need to know about tomatoes. And I was talking about the fertilizing, and I got caught by the hard break there. So you want to fertilize with a 6-8-8 or a slow-release fertilizers for flowers and fruit. Okay, that will help you out. You can use a liquid fertilizer solution, but I just prefer in the heat of Florida, summertime stress, to use a granular slow-release fertilizer. But you can use liquid fertilizer according to the label. You're going to need to water it, if no rainfall, 1 to 2 inches of water per week with heavy soakings once a week is the best way to do it. So it's better to water less often but longer, okay, rather than short, lighter sprinklings. And this is because it'll keep the root system, make the root system go down deeper. Okay. So once or twice a week, you want to water your tomatoes. Make sure they get 1 to 2 inches if no rainfall. And then mulch is always beneficial to keep that moisture in. It doesn't evaporate as quickly. And it's going to suppress weeds. You're not going to have to be pulling weeds out as much. Watch your plants on a regular basis. Look at them every day because things can happen. Wilt can happen overnight. A virus can happen. Your insects move in and they do the damage before you even see it if you're not going out there every day. All right. So that is my growing tomatoes. I am going to post my recipe for dried tomatoes. Let me see. Can I get it out here? Can I do this? Let me just real quick. Can I do a quick recipe?
Sure.
But I'm also going to post it on Better Lawns and Gardens Facebook page. So you want to go ahead, take your tomatoes in and let them completely dry and cool before you go ahead and cut them open. You can slice them, slice them on a tray. You can sprinkle salt on them and then sprinkle garlic oil or olive oil. And you can even, sprinkle them with garlic. Then you put them in the oven. You can put them in the oven at 250 for 4 to 6 hours. I would check on it depending on how your oven works. And then let them cool. Then you can place them in airtight containers after they cool down. And you can put them in olive oil. And they will be good for several weeks in your refrigerator. And if you're just leaving them in the containers at room temperature, airtight containers, they will last for a whole year in your glass jars. All right. And so that's how I do them. Now, if you want to put them outside, you can and do the same thing. I would leave them out there for 8 to 10 hours. Again, sprinkle them with salt, a little bit of olive oil, and then bring them in at night. And if they're not as crispy as you like, because I like mine really crispy, and the sweeter they get, the more you dry them out, the sweeter they get. And so bring them in, and then you can put them back outside again as two, or leave them on your shelf and just let them dry naturally. So I will post that on our Facebook page. Let's see. Here we go. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And so right now, walk your yards on a weekly basis. It's so important to catch a problem while it's a small problem. Okay, you don't want to come out and your whole lawn is dead. You haven't been out there in a couple of months. So walk your yards on a regular basis. Sod webworms are active right now. And also chinch bugs are active right now. And they're going to be for the next couple of months. Do not use weed killers right now. Do not use herbicides right now. They don't do any, the weeds are more stronger than the herbicide, than the chemical, and they're just going to laugh at you and you're going to waste your money. Wait until the fall, till the cooler temperatures, and then you can go ahead and use an herbicide to kill your weeds. Also, too, if you're putting in a new lawn, and you can sod any time of the year right now. You can sod any time of the year, but you want to make sure that you apply a fungicide as soon as you lay that sod. And that's because it's highly susceptible to fungal diseases because it hasn't really gotten established yet. But also, too, you're watering it on a multiple times basis, especially even if you're getting rain. I would go ahead and water it to make sure you're getting adequate water for your new sod. So here is the thing. You want to water new sod. I'm going to give you these instructions. Water once a day for the first week. If you've got zoysia or centipede, you may have to water twice a day if no rainfall and the temperatures are 98, 99, 100 degrees, okay? Just keep an eye on it. Then you water once a day for the first week, water every 2 days the second week, and every 3 days the third week. And by the end of the month, your grass has pushed its roots down deep enough that you can go to twice a week watering. Or once a week watering if you're in an area with severe drought and they're just telling you once a week watering. Okay, that is important. If you water every day for 30 days or 60 days, some areas allow you to water for every day for 60 days, your root system is going to be so short that when you turn that water off, when you stop watering, it is going to go into an immediate decline. You've been growing it hydroponically. Better to water less often, but longer. How long? You need to calibrate your irrigation system by putting out tuna fish or dog food or cat food cans, not the little cat food trays, just the cat food metal cans. Marking it 1 inch of water. Time how long it takes to fill that can up to 1 inch, and that's how long you water for. It may be different than your neighbors because you have different pressures, different irrigation systems. If you have a can that doesn't have any water in it, you've got a really inefficient irrigation system. Okay, so you do want to check that out. Also, again, let me remind you to go ahead and check this week that your irrigation system does not come on. If you've got your irrigation shut-off devices set for 1.5 inches, here I am pointing my fingers. Lizzie, you see me?
I feel like I'm being scolded here, just looking through the window at you.
I'm very animated. My hands are very animated when I'm talking. But if you have your irrigation set at 1.5 inches and it's working properly, when you get 1.5 inches, your irrigation system will not come on anymore, okay, until that system dries out. And then your irrigation timer will continue to work again. Okay, so that's very important. We do want to protect our water supply. And because we're in a drought doesn't mean we need to water more. We only need to be watering normally. And we're going to catch up with the rainfall. Oh, there you go. Peach trees. No, thank you. I do not have that text. What does it say about peach trees?
It is in Melbourne. I think it's Tony in Melbourne. Yes, Tony in Melbourne. Good morning, ladies. I have a peach tree that is 4 years old and doing wonderful. We never fed it before. When is the best time to feed it and what kind of food?
Okay, so peach trees, I mean, need to be fertilized on a regular basis. So the best time to fertilize it was about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Oops. You want to fertilize it on a consistent basis, depending on your slow-release fertilizer. You can use a slow-release fertilizer for fruit trees that you can every 3 months, every 6 months, every, you know, depending on what fertilizer you use. And it's just important to follow the label and put down the right amount. Read the label. It's going to tell you, like, you may need to put down 2 pounds, depending on the size of your tree, up to, you know, 1 pound to 2 pounds of fertilizer per tree. So especially when they're new, they need to be fertilized appropriately. So you follow the label. The amount is very important. You just can't sprinkle it around the peach tree and think you're getting enough. You want to do it on the outside of the canopy so that it gets into the ground where the roots are. 4-year-old tree should have a good amount of roots. So go ahead and depending on what fertilizer you use, you know, you can use a 666, 888, 10-10-10, but you also want to be able to put those micronutrients down. So look for a fruit tree fertilizer, and it'll have the fruit trees on the front of it, and follow the label. And just, you want to make sure you're doing enough. That's going to give you the best production, is to make sure it's getting the nutrition it needs. Lizzie, thank you so much. You're a magician behind the screen there. Thank you so much. We appreciate all of our callers today. Thank you for being here with us. We love having you and listening to your gardening questions. Big thank you to Dana Venrick, Quality Green Specialist Nursery. He knows everything. You need to go by the nursery and check out all of his fruits and trees, shrubs and natives. He's got natives, beautiful flowers, and butterfly gardens. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
If you miss any of the show or any of the other shows that you'd like to recap, go to betterlawns.com. That's betterlawns.com.